No one plans for hair loss, but through Hims, you can take the next step with confidence. Access treatments made with clinically proven ingredients like finasteride and minoxidil to stop hair loss and regrow hair in 3 to 6 months. No waiting rooms, no hoops, just ingredients with a track record of results. You shouldn't have to go out of your way to feel like yourself. Hims brings expert care straight to you, with 100% online access to personalized treatments that put your goals first. For simple online access to personalized and affordable care for hair loss, ED, weight loss, and more, visit hims.com/Hail Mary. That's hims.com/Hail Mary for your free online visit. hims.com/Hail Mary. Individual results may vary, based on studies of topical and oral minoxidil and finasteride. Prescription required. See website for full details, restrictions, and important safety information.
All right. Welcome back to another Wisco Fanatics Wednesday. We are live today. We have a bunch of basketball games. We have 5 basketball games to talk about. We have 2 college with the Badgers, and then we have 3 Milwaukee Bucks games to discuss. We're going to jump right into it.
Welcome to another live episode of the Wisco Fanatics Show, where we discuss the Packers, Bucks, Brewers, Badgers football, and basketball from an optimistic perspective. Wisco Fanatics is brought to you by Cardboard Legacy, Wisconsin's most complete sports card shop. Buy, sell, grade, and consign all at their location in Oshkosh.
So, really, really quickly, before we start talking about Badger basketball games, we want to address a couple things as far as Cardboard Legacy is concerned. So, first things first, the card show on Saturday was awesome at the Hurt Arena. Definitely check out any card show that Cardboard Legacy puts on. They are very on top of their stuff. Nick, that owns Cardboard Legacy, is an awesome guy. He's really attentive to the way that he runs things, which I appreciate. Also, we had a bunch of entries for people who followed us on new platforms, so we are going to do that giveaway after the Badgers segment and before the Bucks segment, because Mike's on a little bit of a time crunch, so we want to make sure we get him out of here on time. And then lastly, as far as Cardboard Legacy is concerned, they are going to sponsor us again for 2025, which we are very appreciative of. That's going to help us. Unfortunately, we aren't going to be able to go to the Senior Bowl this year, but we are going to start saving up to be able to go to the Senior Bowl next year and maybe, just maybe, bring Mike with us. So, tentatively planning for the 2026 Senior Bowl, and Cardboard Legacy sponsorship is going to be a part of that, which we appreciate. So we're excited to have them on for another year, and we appreciate them helping us out and attending their events. So that said, starting with Badger basketball, we're going to start with the USC game from Saturday afternoon that was happening while we were at the Cardboard Legacy event. So Mike, let's go to you first and start with the guards from Saturday.
Yeah. Still trying to get used to the whole thing regarding USC and UCLA being a part of the Big Ten. It's still weird seeing those two teams like on the, you know, same court, and you got the old Big Ten logo in the middle of the gym. So, you know, that was crazy. But, no, anyway, great win against USC. You know, first call for sure was Max Klusman in this game. I mean, for obvious reasons, when you hold your leading scorer statistically to 0 points, you got to have other dudes step up. And, you know, I think Max Klusman answered the call this game. He got a lot of shots up, but it was much needed. Again, going back to, you know, one of our star players not having his best night, but, you know, Max Klusman at 18 points, 4 assists, 2 rebounds, 7 of 14 from the field, 2 of 9 from three. I know it was only 2 of 9 from three, but I think it was a lot of those were legitimate good looks. And, you know, again, at the end of the day, you know, when, you know, John Tanjay unfortunately did get held scoreless, you got to have other guys that step up. And I mentioned it in the chat, but USC did a really good job. I don't mean to get too sidetracked here, but I thought USC did a great job, you know, defending John Tanjay and taking away his strengths. As soon as he caught it on the wing, he likes to do his like little rip move and tries to get to the bucket, and USC completely shut him down from that. So kudos to USC. But going back to, you know, Klesman's day, you know, he pretty much closed it out too for the Badgers to win this ball game. He scored the last 6 out of the last 10 points to close the game, and 13 of his 18 points were in the second half. And when USC was going on that run, when we had a big halftime lead, they got it down to 55-52. you know, Max Klesman was one of those guys that stepped up in the second half and, you know, put the nail in the coffin, so to speak, to win this game. So definitely going in a positive direction. I've talked about his droughts already this year multiple times. And this is one of those good bounce back games that, you know, not just Wisconsin needed, but for what he needed personally. And, you know, I think that comes back with experience too, with Klesman. He's got a lot of experience with this team, and even the team in general stepping in Tanjay's absence from a scoring perspective. I think that speaks volumes to this team in terms of what they have the potential to do this year yet. There's obviously a lot of goals out there. So, you know, props to Klez in this game. And then, yeah, Cam was another major call out. Again, another stat stuffing performance. You know, 28 minutes, 10 points, 4 assists, 3 rebounds, 2 steals. That percentage from the 3-point line has not gone away. It's still right up there with, you know, being one of the most efficient in the country at 55-56%. His plus or minus ratio was plus 21 in this game too. So, you know, I toot my horn about this all the time, but I think he's such an important piece to this team, and he's definitely going to be one of those determining factors on, you know, how we decide and where we want to go with this team this year. So those are the two major callouts with the guards. My quick takeaways here. I thought the Badgers did a very, very good job containing USC's leading scorer, Desmond Claude. This dude was coming into the game averaging 20 plus, over 50% shooting, you know, which is, you know, very, very impressive. We held him scoreless in the first half. And then he had 9 points all game, held him to 5 turnovers too, which is outstanding from a defensive perspective. And I mean, in general, the Badgers, I think, did a really good job, you know, holding USC to a season low, 27 points in the first half. And, you know, with, you know, Badgers getting a lot of accolades this year from the offensive side of the ball, this is a really, you know, impressive performance, you know, putting on a defensive clinic, so to speak, especially in that first half. So, no, those were definitely the major callouts for me in this game.
So looking at the guards, you kind of mentioned John Tanjay, and you and Jake both last week were calling for more Kamari McGee minutes. And in my mind, this game, those minutes came at the expense a little bit of John Tanjay. So John Tanjay only ended up playing 22 minutes of this game. He only took the 3 shots, 2 of which came late in the shot clock. He also had a couple early turnovers. And then you just look at Kamari McGee, and he was locked in. So I don't mind Greg Gard giving Kamari McGee a little bit more run. Something you guys were calling out last week with the Minnesota and Ohio State games. Looking at John Blackwell, he started 3 for 3, including 2 for 2 from the 3-point line, making really good decisions on attacking the basket, finishing well. He had 16 points in the first half, 12 points in the second half to finish 28 points, 10 of 16 from the field, 2 of 7 from the 3-point line. I still think that's where he has an opportunity to improve. And 6 for 7 from the free throw line, which is great. Ended with an exclamation mark dunk at the end of the game. So with his 28 points, 5 rebounds and assist, 2 steals, did have 3 turnovers. That's kind of the mark I'd like him to stay under. So if he's at that or under that, I'm okay with it. Looking at the Badgers as a team, 3 turnovers in the first 3 possessions and then 4 straight scores. Kind of a roller coaster to be riding there. I did like seeing, I'll let Jake talk about Adrian Amos come in and be effective right away. Looking at what other things USC did to kind of neutralize the Badgers' offense a little bit was they basically divided the floor kind of how the NFL has the hash marks. And that's how it seemed to me, was like the paint lines extended to half court, and they were hedging that super far out, not trying to not let the Badgers get to the middle of the floor. And that, to me, is what made it kind of hard for John Tanjay, because it cut off about half of his dribble drive options. Now, when we get to UCLA, I'll talk a little bit more about what I mean with John Tanjay and him driving. But for USC, sliding super far out in the middle of the floor and then pressuring the ball, it's not just something that, like, oh, why don't the Badgers do that? Your roster has to be built for length to be able to try to do something like that. So that's not just a, oh, why doesn't everybody just do that? It's something that you have to be built for. It's just like, we'll talk about it in the spring, I'm sure, but The Badgers are going away from the air raid. Now they're going back to a power run game. You need to be built for that. So there's going to be less flashy wide receivers, and there's going to be more big Berthas up front.
Thank God.
Yeah. So you got to be built to do certain things and strategize certain ways. I will say, love seeing Nolan Winter working his footwork. I'm going to let Jake talk about that as well. I'm just going to leave that at that. Now, second half, Wisconsin got up by 19 points. USC went on a 13-0 run. Ball movement slowed down for the Badgers, and the Badgers weren't getting to the paint. The Badgers were hitting threes in the first half because they were playing from the inside out, not shooting contested threes. So that's going to be something I will definitely continue to keep an eye on with how the Badgers shoot threes, because they're shooting more of them this year. It's got to go inside out. That's what gets you open looks. It's what gets you better looks, and then the ball movement on top of that. Now, I will say, like Mike said, when USC got within three, it was basically Max Klesmann and John Blackwell getting to the paint, helped to bump it back up to seven. And then after USC got close, the Badgers kind of cranked up their defense too, and used it to feed their offense. And then Kamari McGee and John Blackwell were able to push the lead back up to 13. So overall, very pleased with the wings, especially John Blackwell. John Tonjay, in my mind, I was thinking that this game doesn't mean that John Tonjay isn't good or that he's overrated. In my mind, it goes to show that the Badgers can win a game without their highest scorer scoring 20-plus points. In my mind, that shows me that the Badgers are deep and versatile and can win in multiple ways. And as we get closer to March, it's going to make the Badgers a really hard team to beat.
I agree with that.
All right.
So, Jake, I'll let you talk about the bigs, and you can transition us from USC to UCLA.
So, first, Tyler, we were on Xbox last night as we were watching the UCLA game, and I kind of brought up a discussion on Blackwell, where he needs to get a little bit better at handling the ball because he gets some floppy turnovers sometimes in transition. And it made me want to go back and look at his recent games. So this is just a quick shout-out for John Blackwell. Obviously, everybody knows by now that the Badgers won this game, and it pushed the win streak to seven. So during that seven-game win streak, Blackwell had 27 assists and 14 turnovers, so damn near 2-1. So he's been doing a really good job of that. So I just wanted to give him a
call-out.
Little pat on the back for John Blackwell. He's doing really good. He's growing in front of our eyes into a true point guard and a three-level scorer all in one, morphed into one body. So he's doing a tremendous job. So good job, John Blackwell. In terms of Nolan Winter, man, the sky is the limit. We could talk about John Blackwell, and he does some fun stuff. John Tonjay does some fun stuff. But, man, if you're a basketball purist, you love watching the Wisconsin Badgers offense because it's beautiful when it's run correctly. And then you also love watching a guy like Nolan Winter with a little bit of old school mixed with some new school into his game. As he gets stronger, obviously, you know, the footwork is there. Tyler's talking about it. The footwork is there. He's doing the right things fundamentally. Now, the strength is going to be the thing that really shows it off, right? And he's getting stronger, and he's doing a tremendous job. 27 minutes, 6 of 7 from the field. 1 of 2 from three. I love that he's starting to jack up more three-pointers. Love that they're starting to go in as well. He did a nice job there. Crowell, only 17 minutes. Didn't need him as much in this game, but he did play some good defense, in my opinion. He was in the right position most of the time from things that I saw. He ended with 9 points, 3 rebounds, and an assist, 3 of 4 from the field, 1 of 1 from three. So, again, as Tyler brings up all the time, just presenting yourself as a threat is a big thing for Stephen Crowell. I do have his numbers during the seven-game win streak as well, which the last loss before the UCLA game was the Illinois game where he got called out publicly by Greg Gard. So I wanted to give you guys those numbers, so just hold on for that. So I really love that you brought up Amos, him being effective right away, because something that I wrote in my notebook was I wrote yin and yang for Amos and Gilmore, because I feel like their impacts are different, where – when Amos is put into the game, he's kind of looked at as a guy who's instant offense, right? When Gilmore comes into the game, he's kind of the guy that's just like, all right, everybody, let's calm down. I'm in here to play some defense. We're going to lock in on this end of the floor. And they are yin-yang in that way. They come in, they're both similar size, they're both similar athleticism. Amos obviously came in from Northern Illinois, a guy who is known to shoot threes and be a scorer, right? And Gilmore, his MO is he's just a hustle guy. Lunch pail, first guy into practice, last guy out. So they're literally yin and yang, and I love how Gard is using them. But, yes, Amos came in the game. 4 points, one for three, one for two from the three-point line. I wrote spark plug next to him as well because he does a tremendous job when he comes in ready to shoot, ready to spread the floor when others aren't making big-time shots. Couple quick shout-outs I wanted to give here. The Badgers forced USC into 16 turnovers. That turned into 22 points for us. I mean, so tremendous job there. We also held them to 28 points in the paint, and we scored 38. So you got 22 points off turnovers, and you're plus 10 on points in the paint. You held them to 6 of 15 on three-point shots, so they're not getting a lot of looks, and they weren't making a lot of them. 40% is not bad, but, you know, you stretch that out to 12 for 30, you're not going to be feeling too good about yourself, right? So good job by the Badgers. That's been something that Tyler and I have talked about as well, as players not closing out on shooters fast enough. So for them to only get 15 looks at the three-point line is a big deal to me. The Badgers win streak up to 7. Now, I'm going to take us into a transition here because the Badgers run a 7-game win streak after this. So Butler, Detroit Mercy, Iowa, Rutgers, Minnesota, Ohio State, and USC have all died by the hands of the Badgers. Stephen Crowell has scored 106 points, 42 rebounds, 12 assists. He shot 40 of 56 overall during the 7 games, 7 of 15 from downtown. He had 4 blocks and a steal. For averages, that's 15.1 points, 6 rebounds, 1.7 assists, 71% from the field, and 46% from behind the three-point line. This is a Stephen Crowell that needs to show up now and for the rest of the season.
Great call out there, Jake. Yes, no, sir. I mean, that's 71%. That's shit. You can't really ask for much more if we're going to be honest.
I mean, he's taking 56 shots in there, and you're telling me he's going to make 70% of them? Love that. Yeah. You want me just to keep going real quick?
Yep, keep going.
All right, here we go. I'm talking a lot today, so get used to my beautiful voice. All right, Badgers at UCLA. I have some things I definitely want to complain about, but I'm going to wait till the end here. Nolan Winter, 5 points, rebound, 0 assists. Crowell, 11 points, 5 rebounds, 3 assists. What I'm going to say about this, the Badgers had a nice defensive effort against USC. You like what I did there? Nice, right? Because they scored 69. There you go. they did not have a nice defensive effort against UCLA. The perimeter defense was bad. The paint defense was bad. The secondary defense, the help defense, was atrocious in my opinion. They just allowed UCLA to get to the rim, and then the Badgers bigs had to step up, and then this big giant guy who needs a 3.5-inch vertical can just grab the ball and dunk it. And that was really the story of the game on the defensive end of the floor. So a tough situation for Crowell and Winter to be put in, but they also have to be better. They have to that's a learning experience for both of them, in my opinion. Amos, far too small to play against him. And Gilmore, he tried a couple times, and I saw the Badgers kind of switching and stuff. And he was trying, but, like, let's be honest. When you're trying to defend a guy and your head goes up to his chest, you really have little to no shot. I mean, we saw it with Zach Edey last year. You could try as hard as you want. You could push, try to get momentum. Mm-hmm. But it is what it is. If he makes the shot, he makes the shot. If he misses the shot, you just say, all right, well, he's gigantic. So here we are.
That's what I said. It's skinny Zach Edey out here.
Yeah, you were saying that all night. Something I have to complain about. First half, Badgers, 1 of 2 on free throws. UCLA, 3 of 4. 6 free throws in the first half. Fine. I am fine. If this is the game that you want to play, this is the game you want to call, that's completely fine with me. Second half, Wisconsin, 17 of 19. Tremendous percentage, by the way. 19 free throw attempts. UCLA, 24. So you're telling me one half they shot 6 between both teams. In the second half, we shoot 43?
You get a foul. You get a foul. You get a foul. You get a foul. Every day was a foul.
So bad to watch.
What the fuck was that? What was that? I cannot stress this enough. If you're going to call no fouls in the first half, that's fine. I will watch that game. If you're going to call fouls, that's fine. I'm going to bitch about it because I don't like basketball like that, but that's fine. You can't do both in one game.
Yeah.
What the
fuck?
There's no adjusting to that.
I don't know what I watched. I was like, is this a new game? Is this two different teams?
It seemed, I think Mike has a number on it. Like, there was a foul almost every single possession.
There was a point in the second half, the Badgers got called for a foul on 8 straight possessions by UCLA.
Wow. 8.
That was so, again, tale of two halves, Jake. I was going to bring it up, obviously, when it came around to me, but like, how do you make that? That was such an inconsistency from you know, as soon as the second half started. Like, what the hell kind of game is this? This is completely different from what we were dealing with in the first half. Like, what exactly, you know, changed? Sure. I don't. But yeah, 8 straight possessions with a foul called on us. It was an absolute joke, in my view.
And for me, I'm sorry. But for me, when I was watching that, you see the fouls starting to pile up, right? And the perimeter defense was, you know, it was what it was. I'm not going to dwell on it too much. But at that point, when the perimeter defense is already not in your A game, and now you're getting called for every single ticky-tack foul, it's hard to be physical with a kid that weighs 190 pounds and he's 7'10". What are you supposed to do with that? Because if you get physical with him, it's just going to be another foul.
Yep.
You only have so many people you could put in that you feel good guarding him in the first place. But this was the ref show. It was ridiculous in the second half. And I'm not saying it just for the Badgers because we lost. I'm saying in general, I don't want to watch a basketball game like that. That was trash.
Nobody wants to watch 43 free throws in a half.
Yeah. No, that's garbage.
Justin said Badgers won him $40 against USC, so he's a Badgers fan this month. Well, just be a Badgers fan all the time.
You should.
They also covered last night. If it wasn't for that John Tanjay 3, because UCLA was actually favored 3.5 going in this game. I'm like, God damn it, really? But all Badger fans can thank John Tanjay for hitting that 3 to cut it to 1. Sorry, that was a side note. I had to throw it out there.
Steve said he just joined. He looked at UCLA's big last night. Last night was his coming out game. He's skinny Zach Edey. That's literally what he was playing like, and that's how he was going.
Steve, I mean, the dude.
Except turnovers.
I mean, the dude averaged, what, like 4 points? Or is it 4 minutes a game? Like 4.3,
and then he had like 18 last night.
Yeah,
so.
Looking at the wings, John Blackwell, like Jake said, he needs some work on some of his full court ball handling. It's just an option, you know, something that he can work on to continue, you know, taking the next step to the next level. He is still doing a good job driving, finishing, kicking out to his teammates. Was good at the free throw line. He was 10 for 12 last night. He hit a huge 3 late in the game to cut the game to a 1-point game. Got the game tying shot blocked. Had a good look. He just held the ball just a hair too long, in my opinion. He was trying to give himself like an extra second to make sure he had, you know, just the right touch on it. And that split second was enough to get the shot blocked. Now, I'm not going to go so far as to say controversy, but just some general complaining. And Mike posed the question, should Greg Gard have called a timeout in that situation? I am a proponent of letting the guys play it out. You look at the possession before that where Blackwell hit the big 3. He did a really good job. There was no timeout called on that play. Just ran a set. John Blackwell got a good shot. Same with the last play. I believe hindsight is feeding into this so heavily because his shot got blocked and the Badgers didn't score that people are like, well, they should have called a timeout and drew something up. Whereas if they called a timeout and drawn something up and John Blackwell gets the shot blocked, then the thing just flips to why they call a timeout. They should have just let the players play. So got to stop the hindsight bullshit. Just let players and coaches do their stuff. Like the whining about it after the fact, just again, there's nothing you can say to me that would tell me that you would be like, nope, I'm glad they called the timeout, even though they didn't get a good shot. If you're also complaining that they just let the guys play. And again, in my mind with Blackwell hitting that big shot to play before the possession before, just let the hot hand go. I mean, 23 points wasn't his most efficient night from the field. He was 5 of 14, but he was 3 for 7 from the three-point line. That's one of his better shooting nights. And he was 10 of 12 at the free-throw line, like I said. Now, the 4 turnovers is a little high. But looking at it, Jake already knows the answer to these two questions. But UCLA came in very good defensively, not just in the Big Ten,
yes,
in the country. So there are 364 schools in basketball for college basketball. Where, Mike, would you guess that UCLA ranks in points per game allowed?
I knew it was up there. So out of 364, oh, man. You're probably top 30, maybe?
Top 30 is where Jake started. They are top 30.
Shit. Let's go 23.
Higher.
Like,
reach to the sky.
Oh.
Sky, right below the sky.
We'll go 12.
They're 15th in points per game allowed. Yeah. Out of 364 schools, they allow 63.7 points per game. Badgers beat that by 20.
Mm-hmm.
Now, where do you think UCLA ranks in turnovers forced per game?
Well, they play great D, so, I mean, that's got to be up there, too. Top 30?
Still top 30.
Oh, boy. Let's go 19.
Higher.
13?
Higher.
9?
Higher.
2.
Hey, nice. Nice.
UCLA ranks second in the country in turnovers forced per game at 17. So UCLA, they are a good defensive team. So in my mind, I'm not looking at this as like, oh my God, the Badgers lost. Now we need to go back to firing Greg Gard and all these players suck. Like, just got to take your losses when you have them. The Badgers went to the West Coast. They went out to LA. They split the games. I take that. So looking at it, it is what it is. Looking at the turnovers, the game started 4 turnovers in 6 minutes, and the second half, 3 turnovers early in the second half. Just got to start the halves better than that. They weathered the storm the first half to take a 26-20 lead after being down 12-6. I'll let Mike talk about the one guard foul that kind of changed the game. But looking at it, the last thing I'm going to say is John Tonji scored 6 of the Badgers' first 9 points, started 5-for-5 from the 3-point line, had a late offensive rebound, second chance point, and 1 shot. He was fantastic. And you look at the USC game and be like, oh my God, is John Tonji overrated? And then you're like, nope, John Tonji is properly rated. He is one of the best players in this team. He can
hard to keep the good ones down.
He can fill it up. He was 8 of 9 from the field, 6 of 7 from the 3-point line, 2 for 3 on free throws out of what? 49 free throws shot in this game. John Tonji only took 3 of them.
So yeah, that's a good call, too. He only took 3 of them.
24 points, 5 rebounds, 2 assists, only 2 turnovers. I will take that as well. Great night from John Tonji. No notes, 10 out of 10. I'll let Mike go on the guards now.
Yeah, as far as the guards go, I mean, obviously it was a very entertaining game overall, but it was actually fairly, if you want to call it quiet, so be it. But Klesman, I mean, he showed up. It wasn't as good of a game as the USC in my view, but I mean, he's still building that consistency out there, taking care. Well, he didn't take care of the ball. My bad. He's got 2 turnovers, but no, he was still very active. I mean, 30 minutes, 8 points, 2 of 4 from the 3-point line. 2 of 5 from the field, pretty average. I would say, you know, overall collectively, does his dirty work like usual, 3 rebounds, 1 assist. And, pretty average night. I would say, I don't have too much to say with Klez overall. He hit some big shots, in the second half with 6 of the 8 points in the second half were big time. So, and as far as Kamari McGee, he actually had a pretty, I mean, to his standard and the standard that I have for him at this point, you know, it was pretty quiet for him as well. 19 minutes, 1 of 4 from the field, that 3-pointer, it was a big shot in the second half. If you would have told me that the Badgers were going to shoot 15 of 30 from 3 in this game, going into it, I would have said it would have been an automatic win. But we've had a couple of those games this year where the stats, you know, don't exactly align with what the final result actually was. I think I brought that up against when we were playing at Rutgers a couple weeks ago. Unfortunately, I got to bring this up. You know, with Jack Janicki, he played like 3-4 minutes in the first half. The critical moment, obviously, it was John Blackwell hits a three. The Badgers go up 41-32, you know, to close out the first half. And, you know, we have a couple fouls to give. And I think it was I think Klesman gave one of those fouls up. And then we had one more to give before the bonus. So, you know, the guy that Jack Janicki was defending, unfortunately, he committed a foul, and the ref deemed it intentional, which I also don't agree with. I know Greg Gard did not agree with, but no, it turned into, you know, a 4-point swing, which led to the, instead of a 41-32 halftime advantage, it turned into 41-36. You know, we can talk about that call all we want. I did not see it intentional by any means, but you know, I'm not the ref. I didn't make the decision. And, you know, unfortunately, it did lead into, you know, UCLA starting with an 11-1 run to start the second half. Yep. And, you know, that's where it kind of went downhill and all the fouls were getting called. It seemed like right after that is when the shit show, pardon my language, seemed to start. But, you know, overall, a couple key points. It's not a bad – I mean, we can talk about the refs all we want, but, like, in the grand scheme of things, this is not a bad loss, I don't think, by any means. You're looking at – you look at the Big Ten now, and it's classic Big Ten when they – you know, there's – everyone's starting to build up losses with the exception of Michigan State, which we got to put an end to that ASAP. But you look at the Purdue's of the world, you look at the Illinois' of the world, Michigan, everyone's starting to – you know, accumulate losses as well. So it's definitely not just us by any means. UCLA, in my view, is definitely a tournament team.
Yep.
Once they get their act together, Tyler, great points bringing up with the whole turnovers and then defensive stats. I did think too, though, at the end of the day, the turnover battle was what kind of led to this too. 13-7 happened in the beginning of the game. It happened in the beginning of the second half as well. I thought UCLA did a good job, you know, scoring on multiple scenarios that gave us problems. Specifically in the first half, I thought we could have done a better job defending the pick and pop. I know Steve had a kind of a hard time recovering against who's 34, Bilodeau, because he hit 2 3-pointers right away, right in the first half of that game, and it was more so defending the pick and pop. And then guarding the dribble drives primarily in the second half, I thought was an issue. You could kind of see in guys like John Blackwell get beat a couple times on that. Kamari McGee did get beat a couple times on that as well. And, you know, just taking away the paint in general, Jake talked about it.
The other part of that dribble drive aspect of it, and Steve, yes, those were Tanjay's exact numbers. The other part of that dribble drive thing is you bring in the foul factor. And then guys are scared to try to
exactly, which I think that's exactly what
to defend. Yeah. So then you have to kind of play like Ole defense unless you beat a guy to the spot entirely. There's no forearms. There's nothing because everything became a foul.
That's what I was saying before.
Yeah. So that like Jake said, what do? You get to a point where you have to just kind of let them go by and let the next level of your defense step up and try to stop it.
Yeah.
So that kind of the game call kind of scripted the game that way.
And then I was going to call two more quick things. I know this is kind of short, somewhat short term, but it's something I'm going to keep my eye on. You know, the last three games, I'm specifically going to call out UCLA, USC, and Ohio State. Where the Badgers have had really good starts in the first half for the most part. But as soon as the second half starts, you know, the lead just goes like evaporates quickly. So it's just something that I'm going to watch, you know, at least going forward. Once we do that, how do we start our second half? Is it going to be like this every single time? And credit to, you know, these three teams, they, you know, it's D1 college basketball. Everyone's going to make their runs, but I just think, but happening three straight games in a row, that's something that I'm definitely going to monitor, I would say, going forward. And, you know, I said it before, this isn't a bad loss, but I was going to call out, too, in the four conference losses the Badgers have had, they have had double-digit turnovers. So you're looking at UCLA last night was 13, Illinois was 11, Michigan was 10, and Marquette was 14. Well, I shouldn't say Big Ten losses. I'm sorry. Four losses overall. But I think that's kind of a common denominator, too, if we're looking at it as well. So I guess going forward, yeah, take care of the ball. And I'm also going to be watching how we start in the second half for the games going forward. So,
Steve, to answer your statement that Wisconsin must be ranked very highly in KenPom offensively, they are ninth. So, yes, yeah. Very, very high in KenPom. They are 21st in net rating. So pretty strongly ranked in the KenPom part of it.
The KenPom used to absolutely hate Wisconsin, by the way. Even prior decent teams in recent years, we were not on the KenPom's high list at all. Yeah. So this is probably the highest I've seen Wisconsin on that list in a long time.
Yeah. Yep. Love to see it. And that's, we've talked about it, but that's credit to Greg Gard for what he's done with kind of changing the attitude, the strategy, the scheme of the program, especially with the way they play offense. So the Badgers only have one game between now and next Wednesday. They play Sunday against Nebraska, so that'll be the only game we have for the Badgers basketball team next week. So, Mike, we'll let you get out of here, and we will see you next week to talk Badgers and Nebraska.
Thanks, fellas. Big one on Sunday against Nebraska. Connor Sejan coming to town. I know he's going to freaking want this one. So the boys better come ready to play, to say the least.
Imagine if he had stuck around. You know how many threes he could be shooting every game?
Oh,
man, it'd be open season for him.
Game.
Freaking 10 threes a game for him.
Yeah.
I don't even mean to get too off topic, but can you imagine Chucky Hepburn was on this team right now too?
Honestly, like, I can't, to be straight up with you. I can't.
Yeah, I think they're better having Blackwell.
You think so? Man. Yeah, I don't know. Yeah, it's all right. We got the right pieces. We're still gonna win.
Yeah, I'm good. And I'm glad Chucky's doing well in Louisville.
Both of them. Yeah, they're both doing well. Yeah, he just broke – again, don't mean to get sidetracked, but I think he broke – he had 16 assists last night in his last night's game. I forget who they played, but, yeah, he had 16 assists. He broke some sort of record, I think.
Probably like an ACC record or something. Ah, there's no way his 16 is an ACC record.
Yeah. So, yeah, just throwing it out there. But, yeah, I'm going to take off, guys. Go Bucks, even though they don't have a game tonight, but and go Batters too. And, hey, it's basketball. The road to March. Let's do it.
All right. See you later, Mike. See you next week.
Yep, later.
All righty. So we are switching from Badgers to Bucks. Now, before we do that, I have here the rally helmet. So I'll let you tell me when to stop. I'll flip through here, and I'll let you tell me when to stop, and we'll pick our three giveaways. We have a bunch of stuff that we got from Cousins. So Cousins wasn't able to sponsor us financially for 2025, but they gave us a bunch of stuff to give away, and we took a bunch of names into the rally helmet here, and we're going to pick three names out of here for people who followed us on Saturday while we were at the Cardboard Legacy Show. So, Jake, I'll let you tell me when, and I'll stop on the one that I'm holding.
Now.
All right.
Uh-oh, who we got?
We got
Oh, boy. This might be one of the little kids' handwritings.
Yep, I can't read that. And there's no email address on there. All right. Do it again.
Stop.
Got a Lincoln Lidkey. All right. There's one.
All right.
Bundle number two here.
Giannis.
Got Shane Fisher.
There we go.
All right. Uno Mas.
All right. Well, this one's for the good times. Chris Middleton. That also means stop, and that message is for our GM. Like, please stop trying to trade him.
Mike Bird.
There we go.
My
congrats to all the winners. Thank you for signing up.
She thought she was going to get favoritism for this, and I'm like, just for that? No. But she did not win. So, Lincoln Lidkey, Shane Fisher, and Mike Bird, those are the three giveaways that we got there. So, thank you to Cousins for giving us a bunch of stuff to give away, like headbands and can koozies and free sub coupons and bags and snapbacks. So we're going to send all that stuff out later this week. So thank you for everybody who followed us on new social media platforms. We appreciate it. And again, thanks to you to Cardboard Legacy. They're sponsoring us again for 2025, which we appreciate. So that's that. Thank you again to everybody who came and visited us, talked with us. Now, let's switch to Bucks basketball, and we're going to start with Bucks versus Magic. So let's go to Bucks Magic and give me your thoughts from that game.
All right. So when we start this, I got to take you back to the game prior to this real quick. On Tuesday, Bucks played a back-to-back last week. They played Tuesday, then they played Wednesday. So I wrote down stats for first quarters because the Bucks were on a hot streak of first quarters, right? First quarter versus the Kings, the Bucks were up 47-26. That's a plus 21 point differential. They shot 66.7%, 7 of 13 from three, and had 12 assists. So they were absolutely firing on all cylinders in the first quarter. Now, fast forward to the next day, they play the Orlando Magic, who got some stuff to talk about. If you're an Orlando Magic fan and you end up finding this podcast, you will want to plug your ears when I give these stats. Versus the Magic, first quarter, the Bucks were up 34-16, which included a 19-0 run, by the way, when Damian Lillard scored 9 points of that 19, including a 30-footer. That means they were plus 18. They shot 60% from the field, 3 of 5 from beyond the arc, and they had 6 assists as a team. So first quarter is just the sweet spot for Milwaukee over the last week of games. Giannis had 26, 11 and 4, 11 of 15 from the field. He meant to shoot in the fourth quarter because we were whooping that ass so bad. Didn't even have to use him. Dame ended with 30, 13 of 19, 3 of 3 from 3. So a Damian Lillard masterclass game. Brook Lopez, 5 of 7. So stats I want to give it on the Orlando Magic. The Bucks are 3-0 versus the Magic this year. They have one more matchup. They are 30-9 versus the Orlando Magic since 2014-2015 season.
Nice.
That includes a 14-game win streak from November 1st, 2019 to March 7th, 2023. So they absolutely own the Orlando Magic. The Bucks see Orlando on the schedule. They're like, we're winning today.
Yep.
So that's how that's going to work. The Bucks, a day after scoring their season high in points, had their season high in field goal percentage in a game, 62%. So great job. Great job there. The rebounding area, we had 49 rebounds, so they're 32 rebounds. We whooped
damn
ass. How they scored. So efficiency, right? On the drive, the Bucks were getting into the paint all day. They scored 38 points in the paint. Damian Lillard had 15 of them. He shot 63.6%. Including off the drive, they were able to create looks for others in the paint. The Bucks scored 17 points off of paint touches. They scored 35 points off of pull-ups. And this is where I was talking with Chris Middleton and Dame when Chris starts to get good. Dame had 15 points on pull-ups off of 75% shooting, and Chris Middleton had 8 off 80% shooting. So they were both dominating in that area. We only had to score 14 points off catch and shoots. So we were just getting to the rim and beating them old school. So love that. We can go to Steve's comment here.
Yeah, Steve asked if Gary Wolfel is the one reporting the Bucks are trying to move Chris Middleton. I hope he's the one because he's always wrong. I've seen it from a couple places that the Bucks are willing to potentially get into a deal that would send Beal to Milwaukee, Middleton to Miami, and Jimmy Butler to Phoenix. This essentially comes from the previous John Horst interest in Bradley Beal before the Bucks traded Jrue Holiday for Damian Lillard.
Yep.
That was about 2 years ago when Middleton was injured in the playoffs, and they were considering doing Middleton for Beal at that time. Now, the 2 years since then, Bradley Beal obviously got shipped to Phoenix, and Chris Middleton has been healthy for the last two playoff series. Obviously, they've been first-round exits, but that's what happens when you play without Giannis. So you look at it, and you look at the last two playoff series, which were Indiana, which Chris averaged like 24-9-6. And then the previous season, he was averaging like 22-6-6 against Miami when Giannis landed flat on his back. Those are the last two Bucks playoff series.
Can I jump in real quick?
Yep.
On the Beal stuff? So you were talking, you said this was – couple years ago when the interest really started, right? Now, something that we have brought up on the show is the reason you make a move for a guy like Damian Lillard is because you're trying to make Giannis stop shooting threes, which he is almost completely stopped this year, which is a good thing, right? You bring in a guy like Dame, you give the rest of those three-point shots that Giannis isn't taking to Damian Lillard because he's very good at them. Now, as previously constructed, we had Jrue Holiday as our point guard. Jrue Holiday, okay three-point shooter, not really known as a deadly three-point shooter. That would be why you would bring in a guy with Beal who had that reputation as a deadly three-point shooter before, which it made sense back then, right? But now that we have Damian Lillard, who is at best an average defender, sometimes an above-average defender, he does give a lot more effort this year than he did last year. But you can't have two guys that want to shoot a bunch of threes and have the ball and are subpar on defense. That doesn't make any sense to me.
Let's put a pin in this. And Steve's bringing up Bradley Beal's injury history.
Yeah.
I'm just going to pull up their games played. And I'm sure Chris's is probably lower in the last couple of years.
Yeah.
But, I mean, Chris has played in the last two seasons 73 regular season games, and Bradley Beal has played 83.
Very close.
So you're talking a 10-game difference between the two. So health is really not going to be a point in Bradley Beal's favor. I will give you a spoiler alert. Bradley Beal is going to be a part of a game that we're going to play later as far as trade candidates are concerned. So I'm going to play a little game with Jake. I'm going to have Jake guess based on some of the numbers of some of the players who are in trade talks, and we'll discuss if any of them are ones that we would consider. Now, for me, looking Bucks Magic, Bucks only took 6 threes in the first half, 6 threes in the second half. They made 3 in the first half, made 4 in the second half. So they finished 12 of 41. Sorry, not 12 of 41. That's how many the Magic took. They finished 7 of 12, 58.3%. That sounds much better. That is a crazy three-point number. Not one that I would expect to be the norm. Now, the Magic were 12 of 41. That's 26.1%, meaning the Bucks more than doubled Orlando's three-point efficiency. Another one of those things that would make you kind of plug your ears if you're a Magic fan. Now, looking at it, 21 turnovers is kind of yikes. Only 19 points off those turnovers, which isn't bad considering the amount of turnovers. Now, the last time we talked about the Magic, they are a good defensive team. They do force a lot of turnovers. So I'm not going to freak out and be like, oh, my God, the Bucks are terrible. They turn the ball over too much. Nothing like that. Jake brought up the first quarter. 23-2 run at one point, the Bucks in the first quarter, playing good defense, Damian Lillard being aggressive at all three levels. Now, Jake already brought up his points in the paint, really playing inside out for Damian Lillard, 18 points in the first half and only 1 3-point shot. He finished 13 of 19 from the field, that's 68.4%, and he finished 3 for 3 from the three-point line, scored 30 points with only 1 free throw. For a guy like Dame who can take 10 to 12 a game. Now, We talked about this, I believe it was last week, it might have been the week before, that I said two things weren't being talked about enough was Giannis's passing and Damian Lillard's defense.
Mm-hmm.
Looking at Orlando versus Damian Lillard, they were 4 for 9 from the field. That's 44%. Not great. Damian Lillard also had 4 steals in this game and forced 5 turnovers that led the Bucks. Orlando had 13 total turnovers. 5 of them were forced by Damian Lillard.
Wow.
So, very interesting note there. Steve said, I like how Giannis seems to be playing to his strengths more this year. Fewer threes attempted.
No one plans for hair loss, but through Hims, you can take the next step with confidence. Access treatments made with clinically proven ingredients like finasteride and minoxidil to stop hair loss and regrow hair in 3 to 6 months. No waiting rooms, no hoops, just ingredients with a track record of results. You shouldn't have to go out of your way to feel like yourself. Hims brings expert care straight to you with 100% online access to personalized treatments that put your goals first. For simple online access to personalized and affordable care for hair loss, ED, weight loss, and more, visit Hims.com/Hail Mary. That's Hims.com/Hail Mary for your free online visit. Hims.com/Hail Mary. Individual results may vary. Based on studies of topical and oral minoxidil and finasteride. Prescription required. See website for full details, restrictions, and important safety information.
Got that mid-range figured out. So he's like, if I want to shoot, I'm going to take 2 steps in.
Yep. 15 and in. He's dominating.
I think that's a very, very large part of it.
Agreed.
So other than that, Giannis versus Wendell Carter Jr. The last game, I talked about how Giannis was going against Jonathan Isaac and Goga Batase. This game, played against Wendell Carter Jr. for the Lions' share of the game. He was 5 for 9 from the field, had 11 points and 4 assists when guarded by Wendell Carter Jr., likely due to other defenders having to help so far down onto Giannis. We saw some ridiculous plays where Giannis is essentially being triple-teamed over the last week of games.
Yeah.
Giannis is being triple-teamed, and he's still giving nearly a triple-double every single night.
That's so filthy, dude.
So going into this, Orlando allowing the second fewest points per game in the NBA at 103.7. The two games that the Bucks played recently against the Magic, 109 and 122. So the Bucks offense is starting to show that it is controlling the output more than they're allowing the opposing defense to put the pressure on them. MVP caliber is absolutely 1,000% in the realm of possibility. I think last week we were talking about he could possibly do MVP and Defensive Player of the Year again.
He should definitely be the leader for DPOY, in my opinion, and he should be higher on the MVP list.
Yeah. Looking at, lastly, Chris Middleton. He played 21 minutes, led the team with 6 assists, also had 14 points on 5 of 8 shooting, had 2 rebounds, 2 steals, no turnovers. I sent Jake a screenshot of a Bleacher Report article reporting that Chris Middleton's, or the Bucks' point differential with Chris Middleton is equal to about a 58-win team. Their point differential without Chris Middleton is approximately a 41-win team.
That's an insane.
So you go from probably a top 2 seed to 500.
To play-in game.
Yeah. So just going to kind of reiterate that. Let's keep Chris Middleton.
1,000%.
Into the Raptors game. Go ahead.
All right. So, again, Bucks get off to a very hot start in the first quarter. 37-22 at the buzzer, so plus 15. They shot 11 of 22 from the field. That's 50%. 3 of 10 from the three-point line. 12 of 14 from the free throw line. So, they were attacking early, forcing the issue, forcing fouls on Toronto. And they had 6 assists as a team. So, very nicely done. Giannis, 35, 13, and 3, 12 of 20 from the field. And he has his 12th straight double-double. That is the second longest active streak in the NBA. So good job there. So the Bucks 3-0 against Toronto as well as against the Magic. Going into this game, Toronto had won back-to-back home games versus Golden State and versus Boston. With the Bucks being 3-0 versus them, they swept the season series. That's something Boston can't say this year, baby.
Let me jump in right there.
Go ahead.
Because of those back-to-back wins, the Raptors allowed 101 and 97 points. The Bucks dropped 130 on them.
Yeah.
The Bucks' last 3 games versus the Kings, the Magic, and the Raptors were 130, 122, and 130. Just really underscoring again, like I said, the Bucks' offense's output is dictating the games more than they're being controlled by their opponent's defense.
Yeah, and they're not losing much on defense either. They're still giving effort over there, showing, doing all the correct things on defense. In terms of plus-minus, I wrote this down because I thought this was pretty wild. Almost everybody in the starting lineup was almost double-digit plus-minus. Giannis plus 14, Dame plus 11, Brooke plus 10, Taurean Prince plus 8, and Ryan Rollins was plus 12. The bench was very efficient in this game. They had 44 points, 17 rebounds, and 7 assists, 15 of 29 from the field, and 7 of 16 from beyond the arc. So great job by the bench. They forced Toronto into 31 fouls. 31 fouls. That's almost 10 fouls a quarter. That is insanity.
It's basically eight a quarter.
Yeah. In the first half, the Bucks shot 27 free throws. They were 23 of 27, and they shot 14 in the second half. They shot 41 free throws in this game. They shot more free throws in the first half than Toronto shot in the entire game. In terms of driving, the Bucks scored 22 points off the drive. 5 of Giannis's 35 came off the drive, and 4 of Dame's 26 came off the drive. Catch and shoot, we scored 21. Brooke and Taurean Prince only had 3 points in that area. They both shot 33%. And Bobby scored 3 points as well and shot 20%. So while the Bucks are dropping 130, we have guys missing wide open jumpers. They could have easily scored 140, 145 in this game with a little bit more efficiency from those three. In the pull-up game, scored 40 points. And I knew this was going to happen. I literally called this like a month and a half ago. I was like, when Chris Middleton starts to be a Chris Middleton, this number is going to skyrocket. Dame and Chris combined scored 21 of the 40 pull-up points. And I was like, yeah, that's the Bucks. And this is why I don't want to get rid of Chris, because I think the three-headed monster of Dame, Chris, and Giannis fit well together. You know, with Dame and Giannis kind of getting their groove going, we always knew that Giannis and Chris are going to have that. Now we just need a little bit more camaraderie between Dame and Chris. And they're starting to get it together a little bit, in my opinion.
I have a quote after the – actually, after this game. So okay. I have a quote after that.
Well, that will be a good transition point because they scored 16 points in the paint. They were very efficient there. Only a few shot attempts, but they made them. The Bucks did a really nice job breaking down the defense with the ball handling and getting to the rim early and often. And Toronto had no answer for it, really. So,
yeah. So Bucks were 13-31 from the 3-point line. That's 41.9%. Perfect. Take that every game. Yep. Game was 4-for-7. Gary Trent Jr. was 2-for-5. Chris was 2-for-3. AJ Green was 2-for-4. He hit his 200th career 3-pointer. Love that. And the Raptors were 8-of-34. That is 23.5%. Not good.
That's bad.
Don't love that for Toronto. Well, I mean, it doesn't affect.
Well, that's right.
So looking at it with Toronto, the Bucks held Grady Dick and Scotty Barnes to 0-for-11 from the 3-point line. So the Bucks were really defending the 3-point line with purpose. It did allow the Raptors to get some ball movement going. And we saw it with Ryan Rollins a couple times, letting guys get to the baseline a little bit. That did get some good looks at the rim, essentially, and allowed the Raptors to get some easy dump-offs. But looking at the Bucks defending the 3-point line, their last three games, they are number 8 in the entire NBA, allowing 37%. 0-for-11, is that good? It's good if you're going against them.
It's good for the Bucks, yeah.
Good for the Bucks, yeah. 37%. So you look at the last few years of Bucks 3-point line defending. This season so far, they're 15th in the NBA. Last year, they were 13th. The year before, this would have been the final year of Budenholzer, where they were 13th. 2021, 2022, they were 30th. The year they won the championship, 2020, 2021, they were 27th. And in 2019, 2020, they were 30th. So 30, 27, 30 to 13, 13, 15. And then over the last three games, number 8 in the league in defending the 3-point line. So there's progress there. Again, you know, I haven't seen very much of it lately, but for the Fire Doc people, the Bucks are progressing. You really can't ask much more from Doc Rivers as far as the Bucks are concerned. And furthermore, in this game specifically, you look at the beginning of the fourth quarter, the Raptors came out with a 6-0 start. Doc immediately took a timeout. Out of that timeout, Bucks went on a 10-2 run. The Bucks went from a 16-point lead to a 10-point lead, back up to an 8-point lead, 18-point lead. The Raptors never got within 15 points again for the rest of the game.
Love that.
So, again, you talked about the back-to-back wins for Golden State and Boston, and then you're talking about the Raptors coming in and the Bucks essentially shutting that streak down. And then you go to the 76ers game, and this game is where I'm like, Chris isn't going anywhere. So, this is the game where I have the Chris Middleton, Damian Lillard kind of chemistry quote. Damian Lillard, after this game, Chris Middleton was 5-for-10 from the field, had 13 points, 5 rebounds, and 8 assists, 1 turnover in under 25 minutes. And then after the game, Dame said, he's another guy who sees the game the way I see the game. So for Damian Lillard to be saying something like that, there's chemistry building there. And you look at the Bucks social media and they're sharing pictures and videos of Dame, Giannis, and Chris laughing and joking together on the bench.
Mm-hmm.
And now you want to blow that up?
Hmm.
Like I said, after this game, or after this game, we're going to play a game. So, Jake, you can give me your thoughts on Sunday.
Yeah, so 76ers without their superstar, Joel Embiid. I am so sick and tired of this guy.
Don't ever mention his name in the same sentence as Giannis again.
Don't mention him in the same sentence as superstar at the end of the sentence. I don't want to hear that shit. I really don't. Let's read this comment real quick before it gets lost in translation here.
Steve said, the Bucks won their championship when Giannis played the best playoff ball of his life. That's what we'll need again. Doc has his team playing well now. Just got to keep carrying that momentum in the playoffs.
Yeah.
I mean, we had conversations early in the season when the Celtics looked like world beaters and the Cavaliers were undefeated. And you get to the point of now where we're in January. In December and January, is that when you want to be playing your best basketball?
No.
No. You'd like to be playing good basketball. You'd like to be building good habits, something that Giannis says all the time.
Yep.
But with 3 months of the regular season remaining,
yep,
you want to know things that you can improve. Yep. I mean, we are barely past the halfway point of the season.
Yeah.
And we're still, two-ish weeks away from the trade deadline. So there's lots of improving to do still. And that's the thing is January – get better in February, get better in March, get better in April, be at the top of your game in May, and then hopefully you'll be playing in June.
Yep.
So, continue.
Yeah. Talking about the halfway point, I saw a guy on Bleacher Report today was giving grades out for every team, and he gave the Bucks a C. I was like, I'm not even going to dive into the comments. Not worth my time. We break down this game. So, obviously, Giannis, I told you last game, had 12 straight double-doubles. He now has 13 because that's literally just what he does. Yep. 34, 15, and 6. I say that nonchalant. And when I take a look back, when I'm able to tell myself to take a look back and think about that, that is ridiculous.
Yeah.
And the efficiency that he does it with, 13 of 17 from the field. I don't want these moments to go unnoticed. I really
Okay. So people loved how Russell Westbrook was averaging triple doubles all the time and, scoring 30, and James Harden is scoring 35 a game, and it's taking them 25 shots to get there, and Giannis can score 34 points on 17 shots.
Ridiculous. This guy he's filthy. The thing about Giannis that. And I 100% agree with this comment from Steve right here. Victim of his own greatness. Absolutely. He does not get the love he deserves in the MVP. Usually, like, some guys who are, like, super efficient, like we talk about quiet 30s or loud 30s or quiet 20s, right? That's a thing in basketball. Giannis's points are always loud because the stadium gets loud when he dunks. The stadium gets loud or quiet when he dunks or he does a fancy assist or he grabs a disgusting rebound or he does a spin move and finishes an and one and he's screaming in your face. It's all loud. So I don't understand why it's all hush-hush with him in the MVP race. It makes no sense to me. Giannis needs
because he's shooting more mid-range and those are quieter points.
That's fair. That is a good point. That is a very good point. I hate that you made that good point in the middle of the
That's his game evolving, which he's not getting enough credit for.
Yeah, that's very true. He deserves more love for that.
Look at me. I said two smart things in a row. Ha ha. Good night, everybody.
Good night, everybody. Love that. So talking about efficiency here, I'm going to flip the switch here. On the drive, the Bucks only scored 13 points. They didn't have to score that many points in other places. So on the drive, they scored more in other places. On the catch and shoots, we scored 36. Dame and Torian Prince both had 9 apiece, so that's half of the points right there, 18 points, and both shot 50% on catch and shoot. So very good job. We got a really good Torian Prince game, which it's been a little bit since he really was a big-time factor, but he was a big-time factor in this
one. Can I jump in? I gave him his own section in my notes.
Yeah, go ahead. So, I gave him my own section too.
Oh, all right. I'll let you finish. Then I'll say what I have.
No. I said what I wanted to say. It's been a while since we had a good Torian Prince game.
He was 3 for 5 from the 3-point line, hitting his threes, and he was doing a really good job of – he does a really good job. He's kind of sneaky with it. Torian Prince gets down into the paint when the ball's in the air or the opponents are shooting, and – he puts a hip into the thigh of opposing big men.
Mm-hmm.
And if I was an opposing center, Torian Prince would piss me off because he does it often.
Yeah.
Where he goes and knocks a guy off the platform as the ball is in the air, and they have no platform to jump off of. It's not quite a box out, but it's just like I said, like a hip to the thigh that makes a guy jump like this instead of like this.
Yeah,
and it's something that I noticed multiple times in this game, and I wanted to give him credit for.
Yeah.
So it's something that there's no stat sheet that it'll show up on. There's no highlight reel that's going to show up on. But Torian Prince, I see you, and that is absolutely a part of rebounding. And when you bring up the Bucks beating the Magic, you know, what, 49-32 in rebounding,
mm-hmm.
that stuff matters. 100%. So that's Torian Prince doing things that you don't see on the stat sheet. And then you just look at the 76ers in general. They were 3-for-8 from the field when guarded by Torian Prince.
Yeah,
he was doing really great things, and there's more to basketball than just stats. So 100%. I wanted to give him credit for that.
Yeah, I love that. Talking about that, the Bucks won the rebounding battle in this one by 10. They had 48, and 76ers only had 38, and we held them to only 5 offensive rebounds. I will say that if he would do a little hip check to Joel Embiid, he might end up outside the stadium with how hard he's going to flop. Just wanted to point that out. getting back to the pull-up game, we had 14 points on pull-ups. Dame, Chris, and Giannis are the only ones that shot pull-up shots in this game. They were not very efficient. Dame shot 22%. Chris was 40%, which isn't bad, and Giannis was 40%, which is also not bad, but they got to be a little bit more efficient. They didn't really need it in this game, but I would like that going forward to be one of our more efficient areas since we like to shoot so many of them. Now, the paint touches. The Bucks, everybody was doing a tremendous job, again, breaking down the defense with the dribble drive, breaking down the defense with moving the ball and passing the ball. It wasn't sticking to anybody's hands. And they scored 32 points in the paint, 15 of them to Giannis. Our best offense was definitely just breaking them down and getting in there and getting dirty. And they didn't really have any resistance down in the paint. I mean, there really is nobody that stops Giannis. When he has a full head of steam, you really just follow him.
Yeah.
That's your option. And I saw a stat today that if Giannis would make 80% of his free throws, he would average over 37 points per game.
Oh.
Yeah. I was like, God damn.
Dude, that's
the Wilt Chamberlain numbers.
Wow.
Yeah. Just 80%.
That's insane.
Yeah. 37 a game, bro. That's fucking wild.
Wow.
Go ahead, buddy.
So the Bucks were actually I want to throw a couple things out there before I throw my takeaways out.
Good.
Firstly, I love Tyrese Maxey. He's so good. I love the way that he plays. Like he's not a flopper. He just plays hard. Yeah. He's good on both ends of the floor. Like Philly, if you have any sense, trade Joel Embiid for a bag of Skittles. Like build around Tyrese Maxey.
100%.
Huge fan of Tyrese Maxey. That said, during the second quarter, the Bucks showed a graphic on the screen of their last 30 games.
Mm-hmm.
The Bucks are 21-9 in their last 30 games.
Mm-hmm.
Number 3 in the NBA.
Love
so when you bring up Bleacher Report giving them a C, it's like you take their first 10 games where they were 2-8, you give them an F, sure. Since then, I mean, I don't know how you can give them anything lower than like a B+.
Fair.
So, you know, I'm not obviously saying you can take those games out because they obviously count, but the Bucks trending is a much different direction.
Agreed.
Hence the episode being titled Bucks Surging. Now, 14-37, that's 37.8 from the 3-point line. That's decent. Already mentioned Torian Prince 3-for-5, Brook Lopez 2-for-3, Gary Trent Jr. 2-for-5. Turnovers 6. That is beautiful. And only allowing 6 points off turnover is also beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
I already gave you Chris's numbers. I'm going to give you more numbers with Chris. But looking at his per 36-minute numbers and his percentages, they're all pretty much on par with the rest of his career.
Mm-hmm.
obviously he's had three All-Star seasons, so he's not playing at All-Star Chris level yet, but he's also only playing 20 to 25 minutes a game. Once he gets to 25, 30 minutes a game, if he's giving you like 18, 8, and 6, like what are we complaining about at this point?
Yeah.
And his shooting numbers are on par with what they've been for his career too. I don't understand, outside of the minutes restriction that is still 3 months away from being a playoff situation, like what else people want from him?
I don't know either.
Giannis talked about it after the game, the Bucks losing focus at points. There were two instances, one in the second quarter, where the Bucks kind of lost guys in the three-point line multiple times.
Mm-hmm.
Maxey hit a couple threes. Eric Gordon hit a three. It was three times within 5 minutes that guys got lost on the three-point line. We just talked about the Raptors game, the Bucks defending the three-point line great. This game, not so much. I'm not going to name names because it's going to just get to a point where I sound like I'm just trying to dog one guy for the sake of dogging one guy.
Yeah.
So I'm going to leave that out. Now, we get to the beginning of the third quarter. Bucks got a little sloppy. 76ers got the lead down to 5. The Bucks snapped out of it quickly. It got to a point where the 76ers were hitting threes for guys that don't even normally hit threes. You know, guys that are like 28% three-point shooters hitting threes and stuff. It is what it is. Just snap out of it a little sooner, I guess. You know, I'd like to see the Bucks come out a little more fire in the second half, I guess, is the way that I'll say it.
Mm-hmm.
Steve asks, is any other second option in the league get more shade than Chris? He's not even the second option. He's third option. And when he's coming off the bench, then he's kind of like the first option. So he's like hybrid first and third option. So I guess that way it averages out to the second. But there's probably guys that get just as much shade as him. But, I mean, from their own fan bases, probably not.
Sabonis gets a lot of shit, too. That's the first guy that kind of pops in my head. Sabonis gets a lot of shit.
That dude's dominant.
He's kind of bad on defense, though, so he gets kind of shit on for that.
That's fair. But, I mean, people have given Chris plenty of hell for that, too.
Oh, dude, I'm not even going to get started. I'll go on.
Okay. So, what I did appreciate, ball movement. Everybody was bought in. Love to see that. I love seeing Andre Jackson Jr. being active in the paint. Thank you, buddy. Please continue doing that. Not just looking to catch the ball in the restricted circle and immediately looking to pass the ball out of the paint. I love seeing him being aggressive in the paint. And he flashed his passing ability twice in the third quarter. Had a behind-the-back pass to Giannis for a dunk, which was sweet.
Yeah, it was.
Just doing a really good job there. That's the kind of Ajax that I need. I don't need Ajax to score me 10 or 12 points a game.
No.
At all. If he scores like 8 or 9 and has 6 rebounds and 4 assists and no turnovers, that's what I want from Ajax while playing elite defense.
Oh, yeah. I was going to say the defense is really the most important thing, especially against teams like Boston and, you know, like Cleveland. You're going to throw them on Donovan Mitchell, you know.
I was just going to say in, like, New York with Brunson.
Yep, New York with Brunson.
So like, that's all I need from him. I don't need Ajax to score. But if you're catching the ball in the paint, in the dunker area, the restricted circle, just make your layups, make your floaters, make your push shots, whatever you want to call them.
He's a good option at fast break.
Yeah, all those things. I'm very happy with Ajax, and I'm not trying to be like a truther or anything or like push narratives or anything, but this is another one of those things where people are not giving Doc Rivers credit, something that has been complained about for the last 5 years of Milwaukee Bucks basketball, of young guys not getting enough run. AJ Green and Ajax are pretty crucial points for this Bucks team.
Hey, Ryan Rollins is getting plenty of time early too.
Valid. He's taken the backup point guard role from DeLon Wright. Yeah,
he really is.
That's valid. So another narrative kind of busted there. Now, last couple things. Maxey 0-for-4 against Gary Trent Jr. So just another guy that you've wanted on the Bucks for a long time. That's here now and doing great things. Like I brought up last week, he's hunting down loose balls. I love to see that. 50-50 balls. Love to see him going after those. Now, the Bucks schedule – that's a little weird. So tonight they were supposed to play in New Orleans. That is not happening. That game is postponed. Tomorrow night's game is also in jeopardy because the Bucks are in New Orleans currently. They went down there the day before the snowstorm started. So they were down there, which I get that the NBA doesn't want to lose, you know, game revenue for a game, but I don't understand why you couldn't just play this game in front of no fans.
You don't want to lose game revenue, but you're scheduling games during the NFL playoffs? Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
I mean more like locally in the stadium.
I know what they're trying to say, but like, come on.
Yeah. It is what it is. We got to a point where the Bucks were playing Sunday, no game on Monday or Tuesday, and then they were going to play Wednesday and Thursday.
Yeah, I mean, what are we
with
doing?
Travel in between?
Yeah.
Which they still might be. The plan is for the Bucks to hopefully get out early tomorrow morning to still be playing against Miami tomorrow. Miami is already on their way to Milwaukee because Jimmy Butler did not make that flight and is now suspended. So if the Bucks play tomorrow night, Miami will not be playing with Jimmy Butler. Other than that, the Bucks play Saturday at the Clippers, then they play Monday at Utah, and they play Tuesday at Portland.
Jimmy Butler is going full Le'Veon Bell right now, bro.
Dude, yeah.
Full Le'Veon Bell. Like, Butler. Being active and being a problem at the same time. Like, dude, you're literally going to ruin your career.
I mean, somebody's still going to trade for him, and he's going to be a free agent in the offseason. Unless he exercises his player option. But
who the hell is signing him?
I don't foresee that happening.
The only team that would sign him as a free agent is Golden State, and that's because they're trying to hold on to the good old days. They are fried. They're done. Steph Curry is almost 40. Golden State's done, dude.
Houston would take him.
That's fair. They probably would. Fred VanVleet would play well with Jimmy Butler, actually.
And Dylan Brooks.
He's also a head case. Whatever. Hopefully that's not happening.
So other than that, we're going to have three or four Bucks games to talk about next week.
A couple?
We're going to have some. We're going to have some Bucks games next week.
We're going to talk about Giannis next week.
That's for sure. All right. So before we're done, we're going to play a game, and this is going to be called Name That Trade Candidate. Now, what I've done is I've made a list of numbers. So we're just looking at a ton of numbers here, Jake. Okay. And these numbers from left to right are their field goal percentage, their three-point percentage, and their free throw percentage. And then I have the per 36-minute stats, points, rebounds, assists, steals, turnovers, and then the money they are making this year and for the future.
Okay.
So you see 33.3 and 30.6. Those are the next two seasons. Yep. You see a 50 to 53 to 57 PO. That's player option.
Okay.
Then you see a 36 UFA, that's unrestricted free agent.
Yep.
So there are seven players here. What I want you to try to do is guess who these players are. If you can get them by like saying number three is player A, if you can tell me that, I will give you more credit. But if you get to a point where you don't know exactly who's who, I will allow you to just guess names and I will tell you which one they are.
Well, I know for a fact that the first blue line, the 19-3-3, that's Beal. I can tell by the money.
19-3-3, that is Bradley Beal. Number two is Bradley Beal.
Now I could tell by the money.
That's $50 million this year, 53.7 next year, with a 57.1 player option for 26-27.
And I want to remind people that Giannis and Dame are also getting paid $50+ million. I believe Giannis, no, it's Dame. Dame in that third year where Beal will be getting paid 57, Dame's going to be getting paid $62 million. And then we would have to sign Giannis again to another Supermax.
Yep.
So he's going to be getting $70 million at some point.
Yep.
Which is absolutely astronomical. I'm going to assume that second blue line is Jimmy Butler.
The 24.2.
Yep.
6.1. That is not Jimmy Butler.
It's not Jimmy.
But I will tell you, Jimmy Butler is on this list.
Is he the third blue line? I'm looking at the 3-point percentage. He's not a good 3-point shooter.
He is the third line. So okay. Player number six right here is Jimmy Butler. That 20.1, 6.2, 5.5 assists, 48.8 million this year, 52.3 player option for next year. That is Jimmy Butler.
$48 million, and he cries like my 12-year-old. My goodness. God, I can't even.
Player two is Bradley Beal. Player six is Jimmy Butler.
Yeah. What conference is player one in?
Player one is in the Western Conference.
Western Conference. Okay. McCollum?
That is CJ McCollum. Number one is CJ McCollum at 23 points, 4 rebounds, 4 assists. Taylor, welcome in. Taylor, you joined us in time to play a game. So yes, CJ McCollum is relatively affordable. 33.3 this year, 30.6 next year. That's not terrible. No. Steve said Dame is due for 54 next year, 58 in 26-27.
Okay, then maybe it was.
I'm totally fine paying Damian Lillard that. I'm not fine paying Bradley Beal that.
Yeah. Okay. So we got McCollum.
Player one is McCollum. Player two is Beal, and player six is Jimmy Butler. So you have 3 out of the 7 so far.
Okay. What conference is player three in?
Player three is in the Eastern Conference. Taylor said he likes games. Welcome to the game. If you can guess any of these before Jake, I will give you a crisp high five the next time I see you.
25-3-5. 3 turnovers, 29 mil.
So this player's in the Eastern Conference. I will give you a spoiler alert. This player is currently an all-star.
All-star.
He will be an all-star this year. He's currently in all-star voting.
Oh, shit. I'd just be clicking on the Bucks. I don't even be looking who's leading. He's a good free throw shooter. He's actually 40, 40, and 85. That's and only 29 million. I actually kind of like this. Does he play for the Hawks?
Nope.
Damn, I was really centering in on the Hawks for some reason.
A little more
on the Magic?
Nope. North of the Hawks.
North of the Hawks. He's on the is this LaMelo Ball?
This is not LaMelo Ball.
Oh wow. He probably averaging more assists, that's right. I just thought because of the money he probably didn't get paid as much. God, give me another clue.
Let's see. He was traded this previous offseason.
Oh, Jesus Christ. There's so many people traded.
He was traded from the East Coast or from the West Coast to the East Coast this previous offseason. That's not Cam Thomas.
How did you know I was going to go there because of the point?
I'll tell you, he's south of Cam Thomas. He's south of Cam Thomas and north of the Hawks.
Oh, so he's on the Sixers. Okay. Nope.
That would be west. South, just straight south.
Just straight south? Oh, shit. Oh, he's on it. He's got to be on the Knicks.
No.
No?
He's not in New York.
Steve got it.
Don't look at the comments. Steve got it. Steve, next time I see you.
I went full screen, so I didn't see the comments. I put my phone down. I didn't want any distractions. I'm really trying this.
Good job, Steve. I'm drawing to it.
Just tell me what Steve said. Show me. Let me see if I can see it. Oh, wow. Poole's averaging that?
Jordan Poole, per 36 minutes, is averaging 25.1 points, 3.5 rebounds, and almost 5 assists. Now,
holy shit.
29.6 this year, 31.8 next year, 34.0 the following year. I would entertain the idea of Chris Middleton for Jordan Poole.
Oh my God, I don't hate that. I feel kind of weird saying that out loud.
The only thing really to consider at that point is if the trading the youth for the chemistry is worth it.
Yep. You would have to rein in how erratic he is at times.
Right.
Which is obviously you only see the low lights of this guy. So that kind of kills it a little bit. But man, wow, he's got some good shooting splits, to be honest with you.
I would consider it.
Okay.
So player one is CJ McCollum. Player two is Bradley Beal. Player three is Jordan Poole. And player six is Jimmy Butler. So you have 4, 5, and 7 left.
All right, let's work on 7 here. He's getting paid 43, 46, 49. He's averaging 25, 5, and 5, basically a steal, 3 turnovers, 50, 40, 80. That's pretty fucking good.
Steve, that's a good point. Winning cures a lot of things, but yeah, chemistry takes a hit. Yeah,
that's fair. So, damn it. So, is this guy in the West?
Nope, this guy's in the East. This is really, if we're looking at this list, this is really the only guy that I would be like, yes, I would trade Chris Middleton for him.
Oh, wow. That's crazy.
Well, so hold on. I previously objected to trading Chris Middleton for, but
I got to back up a second here. You said this guy's going to be an all-star. You think Jordan Poole's going to be an all-star?
He's currently voted as an all-star.
Is he really? Wow.
I don't think he's an all-star, but he's currently being voted as an all-star.
Good for him, first of all. All right. So 51, 45, 81. You would say yes to this guy.
I previously would have said no, but he's put some injury history behind him. So I've changed my tune a little bit.
It's Zach LaVine. Dude, I said Zach LaVine, and then you were finishing your statement on he has some injury history. I was like, bro, I got it. It's Zach LaVine. Nicely done.
Yeah, player seven is Zach LaVine. He's a guy that's on the trade block. The Nuggets are currently the team that I've heard the most for Zach LaVine. But if the Bucks could do like Chris and Pat and a first round pick for Zach LaVine,
yeah, then they could honestly just buy out Pat Connaughton because they wouldn't need him. They could buy out Pat Connaughton, allow him to sign worth wherever.
And the Bulls are one of the teams that I've seen are reportedly. Actually, and the Wizards as well are teams that I've read that are potentially like on board with taking on Pat's money.
Okay.
Because he's an expiring contract. So
I need 4 and 5. So four is 19, 6, and 7. That's pretty good. 31 and 34 mil. He's got a player option. 48, 37, 83. 19, 6, and 7. Who's the guy that fills up the stat sheets like that?
What do you think of that? Like, The assists are high, which is kind of crazy. But, I mean, to get 19 points, 6 rebounds, and almost 8 assists per 36 minutes on a guy who's making less than $32 million and 34 next year?
Yeah.
Like, those are pretty good numbers.
And he only has 2.6 turnovers, which is really nice for the assisted turnover thread.
Yeah.
48% from the field's not great. I don't love that. I don't hate that. 37% from the 3-point line kind of cures it a little bit. So this is obviously a guy that isn't afraid to chuck it.
I mean, you look at 48% from the field. That's higher than CJ McCollum. That's just below Bradley Beal by 0.5%. It's higher than Jordan Poole. It's higher than player 4.
Jordan Poole's playing with a bunch of people from the YMCA though, to his credit. Where, you know, friggin' Bradley Beal's playing with a bunch of all-stars and he just doesn't know how to get along or share the ball. God, Eastern Conference?
Yep.
Oh, 19, 6, and 7. Jesus. This is a guy in the Pistons.
Nope. Damn. He used to play for the Pistons a long time ago.
A long time ago. That's a really, really specific time frame.
A really long time ago.
Really long time ago. Dude, you know what happened a really long time ago today was Kobe's 81, by the way. So just wanted to give that a shout out real quick. God, 24, 19, 6, and 7. I was looking at the other one. 19, 6, and 7. God. On the Heat?
Nope.
I was going to say Tyler Hero. I'm not going to lie to you.
Nope.
Hero's been passing the ball pretty well this year.
I don't think he's slinging it like that.
He had a couple of high assist games and lower scoring games because he had to because they didn't have Jimmy Butler. I also thought because he was the 48% and the 37%.
He didn't play for the Pistons a long time ago, though.
That's true. Pistons a long time ago. Jesus, who the hell played for the Pistons a long time ago? They've had everybody, I feel like. God. A big man?
Nope.
He's a guard.
If you want to consider him a guard, he'd be tall for the position, but he's more like a small forward.
Jesus Christ, that doesn't narrow it down.
he's got really good chemistry with one of his teammates.
This one's stumping me, man. My mind is going everywhere. Nets? Bogdanovich?
No.
He's not slinging it like that. What am I talking about? Who the hell is this, dude?
Player number 5 is Chris Middleton.
What? Oh my God, he did play for the Pistons.
Yeah, long time ago, Chris Middleton played for the Pistons. Got great chemistry with one of his teammates. Chris Middleton's per 36 minute numbers are 19.3 points, 6 rebounds, 7.7 assists, and he's making less than $32 million a year.
Damn. That puts things into perspective.
That's what this game was supposed to do. So, would you like to guess the player in the middle? This is one other guy that I would maybe consider trading Chris Middleton for, but this player is an unrestricted free agent next season. His team kind of made a trade in the offseason that maybe they shouldn't have, and it's made their team kind of weird. And now they have a couple other stars that are maybe being shipped out. One that's been shopped in the offseason because they couldn't come to an extension agreement. And that's what results in him being an unrestricted free agent. So that 24, 6, and 5.6 assists guy, you want to take a stab at who that is?
Oh, you just gave me so much to digest there. Made their team kind of weird. I instantly went Timberwolves.
Same conference, much farther south. Much farther
south. Okay. For some reason, when you said much farther south, my mind went to Spurs, but they didn't make a trade in the offseason.
You gotta go. Gotta go a little east, but still in the Western Conference to Dallas? A place that has snow that shouldn't.
Dallas.
Not Dallas. Still farther east.
Shit. This is New Orleans?
It is New Orleans.
This is... shit. I always forget his name. Played for the Lakers.
He did.
What the hell is his name? He is hurt right now, and he's ugly, and has a terrible beard and mustache. He's very tall.
Yeah, 6'8".
The fuck is his name, dude? I'm blanking. Damn it. Brandon Ingram.
Brandon Ingram.
Damn it. I knew it was going to come to me.
So, in the order on this list, player number one is CJ McCollum. Player number two is Bradley Beal. Yep. Player number three is Jordan Poole. Player number four is Brandon Ingram. Player number five is Chris Middleton. Player number six is Jimmy Butler. And player number seven is Zach LaVine. Taylor Jordan Clarkson is an interesting one. He's currently in the Western Conference. The Bucks kicked the tires on him multiple times over the years. Just never got him to Milwaukee. But, it is Brandon Ingram. So, McCollum, Beal, Poole, Ingram, Middleton, Jimmy Butler, and Zach LaVine. You look at these seven players. I mean, is there any of them that you would, you know, scream out to you that say, I want that guy, or that I would trade Chris for that guy?
I really, after seeing the numbers on Jordan Poole, that's very interesting. But, man, Zach LaVine would look real good in Hunter Green.
If we are having a conversation where it's Bradley Beal or Jordan Poole?
Jordan Poole.
Bradley Beal or Zach LaVine?
I think Zach LaVine is my number one guy on this list. If we were to trade Chris, like if we 100% had to trade him, I would go for LaVine. You're talking about a guy in his prime, a guy who's hungry, who's been an all-star. Those are all the attributes I would trade Chris for. But doing it between two teams in the same division would be really tough.
Yeah. So you're looking at this and you're saying Zach LaVine's your number one guy. Let's say you're between Chris and Poole for second. I mean, you're looking at then Jimmy Butler, Brandon Ingram, Bradley Beal, Jimmy Butler, any of those guys that really you want on the Bucks? Like, I'd consider Brandon Ingram, but he's an unrestricted free agent. There's the possibility that he walks.
I honestly would avoid Jimmy Butler and Bradley Beal at all costs. Yeah. Beal didn't cause any problems in Washington. He re-signed a Supermax there. He tried to make it work. It didn't work. It's fine. But now him going to Phoenix, he's kind of etching out a kind of drama queen type of, you know, mantra for himself, which is really sad because he was a fun player to watch in his prime. He still is pretty young yet, so he's still in his prime. But
my thing
with Butler's getting old.
But I want no part of Bradley Beal's contract.
Yeah, how old is Butler? Butler is old as
Jimmy Butler is like 35. He's older than Chris Middleton.
Yeah, so I'm not doing that, honestly. And he's forced his way out of Minnesota. He's forced his way out of Philly.
Beal is 31. Chris is 33.
Okay.
Steve said Jordan Poole is 26. He said yes, please, to that. That's valid. Jordan said, surprised they've never been in the convo for a DeJounte Murray trade in the past since he seemed to be a hot commodity and regularly on the move. They were in the conversation last season because he was actually on one of my bold trade lists last year.
He was. Yeah, I think Jordan Poole would be the correct answer. I would love Zach LaVine. I think Zach LaVine really wants to win, and I think he would fit in really nice next to Damon Giannis.
Just
another floor spacer, attacker. But yeah, Jordan Poole would be really nice, dude.
Zach LaVine is 29.
Damn, so he's only 29, I think we're at the point
where it's like Jordan Poole or Zach LaVine, I would consider. And McCollum, no thanks. Beal, hell no. Jimmy Butler, not a chance. And Brandon Ingram, maybe, but he's unrestricted free agent.
Nah, I'm not doing Ingram just because, like you said, you don't have the guaranteed years after that. So why am I going to get rid of Chris Middleton for a guy I have to rent? No.
Yeah. So that's where we're at. Thanks for playing the game. Jake, you did fairly well at the game. Steve beat you to Jordan Poole, but thanks for playing the game. I'm going to post this and I'll let others play the game. And other than that, we will have, like I said, three-ish Bucks games to recap next week. And we'll keep an eye on trade stuff. I will say this, if there is a scenario where the Bucks do end up trading for Bradley Beal, it's going to be tough, but as Wisco Fanatics, we will do our absolute best to find a way to make the best of it should that happen. Again, it's not something that we want to happen, but let's just keep an eye on the news, and hopefully it isn't the case. But let's see if maybe the Bucks will get in on some Jordan Poole or Brandon – or not Brandon, Zach LaVine conversations.
Yeah.
Steve said getting a young and solid player is the only plus for parting ways with Chris. I agree. Getting younger – and potentially getting better. So other than that, thanks everybody for tuning in. Thanks for the comments. We will see you guys next week.
Later.